when I finished my learning of the language of painting, knowing that I can render with my technique what I'm seeing, I mean, I can imitate nature, but I want to do a step more. I mean, I want to get surprised again by the visual image of what I'm seeing is not enough. Then I try to look for something that surprised me again.
Was mit Kunst? Ein Podcast von und mit Johann König.
Today's guest is the Spanish painter Paco Pomé. Welcome, Paco.
Hello.
Paco, you are, I would say, like a figurative surrealist painter, creating sort of grotesque, surreal images. But before we dive into the show you have here at the König Galerie Munich in Bergson, in the Concrete Silos, maybe you can take us to the beginning of art appearing in your life and the possibility of becoming a professional artist.
Okay, I started my interest in art by chance. I'm very young, at a very young age, when I was 6 years old. And first of all, I have to say that my parents, normally when we go through family albums and they see me in the pictures, when I was very small, I used to stare at things with very open eyes and, you know, paying a lot of attention to things. And they always say that I was very, you know, observative boy. But the thing is that I couldn't see very well. I was with a very big problem of sight. And then they only realized that when I started to try to read in the school when I was 6 years old. Mm-hmm. And then they realized that I couldn't see very well. So they put me glasses. Because in those days there were no like medical revisions for newborn child, at least in Spain. So I was seeing 30-40% of detail when I was until I was six, and then when they put me glasses, I realized that the world was in high definition.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
so everything.
Mm-hmm.
So the surprise for me, I mean, the manifestation of the world, the visible world, it was like a really big surprise for me. I was absolutely amazed with the quality of seeing things, seeing details, seeing the mm-hmm. you know, the texture of things. And then I became mad just with the act of looking was like a gift for me.
Mm-hmm. Before, so, it was more blurry, yeah,
absolutely blurry. Mm-hmm. Because I have a hyperopy. It's like a farsighted,
yeah,
so I needed the glasses. And when I put the glasses on, I mean, I was amazed just trying to write things. I started to write and read, and then coming from a pen or a ball pen or a, you know, any different trace in a paper, I was amazed by that. So I started to draw like a mad when I was young and looking at things with a, you know, lust of the art of looking. So I was, you know, brought from almost half blind person to mm-hmm, a boy that could see everything, and mm-hmm. The act of seeing was for me amazing. So I just started to draw like a mad, copying things from comic books and drawing all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And as I was a very shy boy, very, you know, I had the big glasses and I was fat, and I had you know, the in the mouth, I had to the brackets that yeah. you put in when you,
yeah,
I
yeah.
was a, you know, I was a very shy boy, and I stayed in my room for hours just drawing and looking at comics, and
mm-hmm.
this started for me like I had no chance to do any other thing. I was amazed by that.
This is one part, but how did the sort of professional possibility
the
arise?
Professional possibilities, I mean, started very easily because I was being all the time encouraged to draw and paint, and my parents brought me materials because I was obsessed with this. So when I finished my secondary school, I had it very clear. My parents and my grandfather, who was a constructor, mm-hmm. they wanted me to be an architect, because architecture is like, let's say, you know, a nice profession.
Yeah.
But I was obsessed with the, you know, with the
drawing,
fine art and drawing, yeah, and yeah. painting. And so I didn't have I had it very clear. So when I finished my secondary school, I just entered the fine art school with an exam, and then I did that, and I went for that. Like,
which fine art school did you go to?
To Granada. My hometown.
Yeah,
it was very nice because it was full of young professors, very, you know, open minded, and it was a very new fine art school that started 4 years before I entered. So, you know, the atmosphere was very, very nice. And in the 80s in Spain, they were great because we were, you know, starting with a new democracy.
Post-Franco times, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, everything was so enthusiastic, and the young professors, they let us do anything.
Yeah, but there was no role model of an artist in your...
Not really, no. Okay. No.
And so you went to art school then, and when do you think you found your language? So because you work a lot with... gray tones, you have a pretty much anachronistic approach, often picking up archive pictures,
yes.
But then there's a contemporary twist to it. So, and when do you establish that sort of image language?
Really, it all started after a scholarship I got in New York for, it was in 2004, like almost 10 years after I finished my degree. I started to, you know, to try to prove with several kind of approaches to the painting image, but I really didn't find my tone, my own voice until that time, because I had before that I had the obsession that the real challenge of being an artist, a painter, is just painting from memory. Mm-hmm. I don't know why, but. Especially, I had a few professors in the fine art school that they were obsessed trying to not be realistic and not be like an old-fashioned kind of realist painter.
Mm-hmm.
But I when I went to the museums in Madrid and Prado, I was obsessed with Velázquez, Rivera, and all the old masters.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to achieve the masterfully. Technique,
mm-hmm.
and I wanted to master that. And my obsession, it was trying to control the traditional way of painting, but trying to add something that to get away from the conventions and try to be original.
Mm-hmm. Oil painting, right?
You paint painting, with always, yeah, oil. Mm-hmm. Sometimes acrylic, but mm-hmm. Definitely oil painting and drawing.
Yeah.
But you ask for that kind of reliance to the archive photography and all this imagery that I work with, and that comes from my love for black and white movies, mm-hmm. silent movies of mm-hmm. the 30s, and also black and white photography, and also I really like history and the end of the 19th century and the beginning of the 20th century. That's a time that I'm very fascinated with that.
But it's not only the 30s, no? It's like 20s, 50s.
Yeah,
it's not so...
Yeah, yeah.
But often it's this anachronistic, the men wear suit and wear a hat.
Yeah.
And the women, it's like this somehow, yeah, anachronistic or vintage. And so where this comes from? It's just a personal fascination?
It comes from my education, cultural education in Spain. I mean, we could have the opportunity to see in the television, in the public television, really great movies from those times. And I've seen, you know, apart from the silent movies, I've seen many, many movies from the 50s and 60s, and this imagery, it was a very big inspirational, motive for me. I mean, that was my obsession. It goes more with cinema and comic also from those times that from painting. I mean, I took from painting what the technique of the old masters, but, mm-hmm. you know, my educational atmosphere was from what we saw in the movies from even the 80s or the 70s, but mainly the 50s and, black and white, also noir, film noir from, you know, European also and American.
But what's interesting is the paintings have a black and white appearance, but they're not black and white. So they have this sort of sepia, like a vintage photograph. I mean, a little nostalgic or melancholic atmosphere through that. And what I find interesting, I wanted to say a girl, but I find the characters seem almost fluid in their gender sometimes.
Fluid?
Yeah, there's like this girl who has her arms and legs come together, like a, you know, you play with the squareness of the picture, but then the legs and arms are squares too. So it has a certain, and then I wonder, I mean, she's a woman, but a quiet male woman, no?
Yeah. I like, in my work, I always try to look for the sensation of perplexity that sometimes the world communicates me. I'm very observant. I like to look at things, but normally the response that I get from when I see the world is just a sensation of perplexity. So I don't understand how we humans interact with each other sometimes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We live in a strange world. I always thought about this. And in a way, I try always to find myself in the same situation of surprise, that when I was young and I put my glasses on, then I was surprised by the visible. When I finished my learning of the language of painting, knowing that I can render with my technique what I'm seeing, I mean, I can imitate nature, but I want to do a step more. I mean, I want to get surprised again by the visual image of what I'm seeing is not enough. Then I try to look for something that surprised me again. And then I try to transform the images that normally we see in archival photography, in the newspapers, in the films, or in the documents, depository of the truth or the conventional way we see the photographs, all photographs, for example. Mm-hmm. I want to twist that sensation and then make it something different. Something we are looking to something that is not real.
But when we look at this gymnast again, is this an actual? Is there an actual photograph to it?
Yeah.
And but how?
I try to twist the photograph in many ways. I mean, transform then. When I'm drawing into the canvas, I take the picture not as a, you know, a constant reference, but a starting point in which I'm going to transform into the painting somehow in an unexpected way, because sometimes I don't even know how is it going to end.
So you start on the canvas without having a clear idea?
Sometimes I don't have a clear idea.
It evolves
sometimes,
in the process.
Yeah, the process is it's telling me things that maybe are better than the first idea that I had.
And where do you find these images?
I find them through many ways. I mean, sometimes I find them in family albums or in flea markets that I like to visit and buy photographs or photographs from family albums also. Sometimes in newspapers, old newspapers, on magazines, even internet, archival websites in which I can rely or I can look for public engineering transformation of landscapes or even the construction of new sites. So, for example, the Vancouver archives, they have amazing pictures of reservoir done in the beginning of the 20th century, you know, cutting trees to do like big transformations in reservoirs or constructions or anything.
What I find interesting is what comes to my mind now, it's like very anti-digital images, because in our daily life, what we see on Instagram and so on, these are all sort of new pictures. Usually these old vintage pictures we probably only see like in a family album or in a on a museum for history elements or so.
But I like those images because we have them really inside us. We saw them for many years, and then we saw them in newspapers, in many, you know, in many places, and then we have a conventional way of reading these pictures. But I'm really interested in trying to twist the meaning and make this appear anything else.
So, The first show I saw of yours was in China. Mm-hmm. And I also remember there were some war pictures. So you, and also in our show now, we have two pictures which are sort of war scenes. Mm-hmm. And then often some sort of comic surrealist element appears.
Yeah.
And how did you come about that? And where are these pictures from? Are they Second World War pictures or...?
Yeah, some of them are Second World War pictures and maybe even older, all the pictures from the First World War or even the Spanish Civil War that I'm really interested in. And it's a way of trying not to make fun of the war itself, but trying to make a sarcastic statement about how absurd and how perplexed the war can be. I mean, there is always a way in which we should read images in a certain way, or the politicians or newspapers, they want us to read or interpret the images that they are showing us. And then I try to put them upside down in a way and try to a grotesque and satirical view of what we are seeing, just to convey how absurd is the world that we can be living in. And by mixing this very serious and very, you know, very deep and gloomy pictures and make them something surprisingly humorous. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I want to point out how strange can be, you know, the way we read images. And it depends on what side you are. I mean, even sometimes cartoons or comics can be very, very, very tough to read. And also, violence is also in, for example, Looney Tunes cartoons that I love. Mm-hmm. They're full of violence also. Even Sesame Street, sometimes the characters are violent but funny. And I like to try to match these two worlds into one because... also, we never leave behind what we saw when we were kids, and also try to mix that vision to a vision when we are adult. It's an urge and a longing to play. I like to play with images.
What I find absurd is that you see this picture of this like soldier looking around the corner, and then there's this big cartoon hand like putting him on the shoulder, almost like saying, "Hey, what are you doing? Yeah. You know, take a break." And what I find interesting is that, I mean, this is a 100-year-old picture probably, but today the war still is the same.
Yeah.
You know, like we still have like machine guns and rockets, and there's like Häuserkampf, and it's like, as weird as it seems, it hasn't really changed. Another work which I find interesting, because there you created almost like a double layer of surreality, are these like two men with like ultra long legs crossing a street. It's like a film, almost, it's like a film still, but at the same time, it's totally unreal because it's these surrealistic lands. But then you put even a layer on top because you painted fast forward, backward, play,
the pause sign,
like a Netflix or like a computer interface. Uh-huh. So it's like a double unreal creation.
Yeah, it's a double unreal creation, and it's a way of making contemporary what tradition has said as what to see. And also in this painting, I try to do a balance of contraries. I mean, one man is going upstairs, the other one is going downstairs, one is going to the left, the other is going to the right, one is coming out from the legs, and then the other is growing up from the legs. So it's just a question of balancing something that is complete unbalance. I mean, the world is an absolutely unbalancing situation, and I try to balance it in a way. The language, the mother and the language that we see, for example, in videos with the symbols and everything, and the old way we deal with black and white pictures from the past, is something that I'm very interested in, because I think that history is something that we shouldn't forget. I mean, we have to look backwards all the time, even though we are living in our world right now, and we have to live with what is happening. what is happening right now is not very different to what happened, like, say, 50 years ago.
Mm.
So it's the same with other language, but the chimeras and the desires and the fears are the same.
And when we look at this painting, did you decide in the beginning to have these pause sign, or is this coming spontaneously at the end then?
No, I mean, the way the signs are painted, that exactly is a pause symbol in the middle and not a play symbol.
Yeah.
That came afterwards. But I knew I was going to play with those signs from fast forward.
But you knew from the beginning?
Yeah, I knew from the beginning, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. maybe the exact symbols, they can change in the process.
But these are elements you repeatedly do.
Yeah, I don't want them to be the same, but mm-hmm. I'm very interested in making a miscellaneous kind of painting in which any language can get into. So I don't believe in the highbrow and lowbrow language in art. I think everything can be, you know, plausible.
Another element which I find interesting, which is reappearing, are sort of couple relations, like where you wonder what type of power dynamic is there between a man and a woman, and then she has a giant comic hand and seems to squeeze him, or the other way around. Where are these coming from?
What is coming from where we are living nowadays? I mean, nowadays, the gender issues are very much a very important topic today, which is something that is good, because we are living behind an era that was very, patriarchic. But at the same time, there is something that is not working well in this situations, because people are taking these ideas for their own purposes, and politicians are playing too much with them. So I just want to make a sarcastic view of all that is happening. Even though it's nice that we really should look forward to, equality to come to our lives. But I think the use that the people is doing with these issues is very chaotic.
But at the same time, you put them in very classical gender roles.
Yeah.
The man has a tie,
she
has a dress, but then it's somehow upside down.
Yeah, it's upside down because I want to make the viewer think about these roles and try to put in crisis what we normally give for granted when we see some images, and then try to twist the meaning of what we usually have to interpret in one way and can be interpreted in the other way around.
Another one which I find very interesting is a character which is leaning, but then he's leaning against a cartoonish hand.
Uh-huh.
And I wonder, is that, it's like a, I mean, could be a portrait of a industrialist or like an entrepreneur from the 20s, who hires someone to paint him. It's like clearly a power gesture.
Yeah.
How much of this element is a found picture you then add to it? Or is a starting point to look at old pictures and then it comes to you, or the other way around?
It can be both. I mean, in this painting, I found a really interesting picture of this man
mm-hmm.
that I found out later when I was doing the painting that he was actually Howard Carter, who was the person who discovered Tutankhamun's tomb in Egypt. Mm-hmm. That's why he has in one of the foot, in one of the hook.
Yeah.
But this is the emperor symbol.
Because he lost his foot and then he got a hook, no?
No, it's just that his interest and his life is just absolutely devoted to the Tutankhamun discovery.
How interesting. So this was actually a found, because I thought that creation comes from you. It's an actual picture?
Yeah, it's an actual picture of this man that is leaning on a table. But I used this kind of comic hand.
Just, which is holding him.
It's just taking out all the seriousness that this person has, but also at the time that he's being hooked by his own discovery. So he's just there for that, for the Tutankhamun kind of discovery.
How relevant is the identity behind the portrait? Like, do all these people have an identity?
No,
it's a coincidence.
It's a coincidence.
Yeah, but he definitely looks like an Howard. That's for sure. And then there's another one where I find, at least I sort of interpretate a father and son relationship where it's like all these, I mean, sometimes they're kind of cruel too, yeah. Distorted and sort of David Lynch Elephant Man.
Yeah, kind of thing. I mean, yeah.
That's actually interesting. That's a black and white movie only for the purpose of the atmosphere.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm.
I mean, the family relationships are also very interesting for me. I have related to that issue in many of my paintings because I think it is something that absolutely defines us as persons. And, you know, the conditions in which we grow are essential in our later, you know, development of our lives. And this one is also clearly a statement that can be read in many directions, but it's something related about the father and son and father, the family ties, and what is going to be something that the father wants to teach the boy is not going to be the same for him. I mean, the long legs is not supposed to be the same as the long arms of him. But, you know, there is here, in this painting, a surrealistic approach to something that is being desired by the father and something that is absolutely rejected from the boy. So, but at the same time, they are related because they have something in common, but not what the father expected to be and not definitely what the boy is wanted to do. Mm-hmm. So there's always a distortion of what you are supposed to see that depends on the viewer. But I always try to mark a little starting point in which the viewer is going to go across the painting. But I never want to give an answer.
But there's no narrative. It's not reoccurring figures, right?
No.
It's never, like, for example, these three guys with the long arms, and then the one in the middle is
with the arms
crossing
crossed.
Arms, but then also they're like hanging down because they're long and they seem kind of serious. Yeah, you wonder what they are, like workers or...
They're boxers.
Or boxers, or they are on a beach mm-hmm. being portrayed. Is that also an actual image you then altered?
Yeah, I mean, it's an actual image, but they are not an artistic photograph or they are not famous people or anything. I mean, the most not artistic photo, the better. I mean, I prefer them to be unknown people.
Is it possible to root it? Is it Western? Is it Spanish? Is it American, British?
I'm not sure about these ones. I mean, I think they are British, but sometimes if I don't find exactly the source of the photograph, it's not something very important for me. I just rely on the potential, on the strength of the picture. But the most anonymous, the better. I mean, I like amateur photography, for example, or you know.
And then these cartoonish hands, do they also have an actual source?
Cartoonish hands mostly are from two of my favorite comic books, from Asterix and Obelix, from Uderzo and Goscinny, the French comics, and also Ibáñez, who did Mortadelo y Filemón, which is a series of comics from the 70s when I was young that I really loved. He's very famous cartoonist in comic, you know, draftsman in Spain, but not abroad. But the ones from Asterix they really are. I think Uderzo, he was a hero for me. So I like the way he draws hands and noses and faces and expressions and everything. Uh-huh. I love them.
And maybe as a last picture to talk about, because it stands out also a bit, is this coffin, which I think is the most surrealist image in the show. Where is this coming from?
It's coming from an old picture of a First World War soldier that I found in archival photographs from very old family albums. And I think he's just practicing in a field. And
with a long, what's the name of it? Like a long...
bayonet?
Bayonet, exactly. Bayonet. Yeah.
It's just an image that is so powerful and so naive in a way that I wanted just to make it strong. I wanted to make the loop of death.
So he's being killed.
he's the death, yeah. But the death is also killing.
Yeah.
And but inside is like if he was alive, because you can see the popping eyes inside.
Through the coffin, yeah. And then the empty bubbles, it's like speechlessness? Or?
Yes, this speechlessness means in this painting nothing.
Yeah.
It means the void. It's nothing. And the bubble thought that is coming from the person who is supposed to be pointing at, it's just full of life because it's pink. It's pink and moving.
Yeah.
So there is here a tension between life and death in a way that death can be also very active. It's not the void. It's something that, you know, in wars, soldiers, they're dealing with death. And then it reminds me a horrible phrase that some soldiers of you know of Franco in the Spanish Civil War they sang that I'm the boyfriend of death.
Mm-hmm.
Just it's horrible that phrase,
yeah.
But it's so powerful.
Yeah.
So this is kind of that.
So I mean that's I think maybe it's. Pretty much the red line or bottom line of your work is a duality often, no? It's
duality.
Like, it's like fun and sad, and it's like the two sides of reality, no? It's
that's
like the,
true, yeah. It's very well said that. I mean, you could more or less summarize the way that I approach to imagery, my own imagery, in that way. You know, the duality and of life. I mean, there's
but
always
the same
a balance.
But the same time, it has a certain heavy-hearted nostalgia looking back.
Looking back because I love history.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we should only look forward or look to the present. If we don't see, if we don't try to make a look to what history has to tell us, I think we are, in a way, we are orphans. And then I always like to rely on what we saw. I mean, there is an obsession with new things today. But if we don't look to the past, what do we have? I mean, we would be ignorant.
Yeah, I mean, that also pretty much suits that sort of old media painting. How do you deal with like standing on shoulders? I mean, on painting is like the most toughest discipline to choose in creating something new to the discussion.
But that is a real challenge for me. I mean, trying to use the old-fashioned way of painting and try to do it well and try to make it contemporary, I mean, that's a real challenge. I mean, I don't want to stop looking at old mastery of the you know, of the best painters that I have the chance to see in the Prado, for example, in Madrid all the times I go there to present my respect to Goya, Velázquez, and Rubens, and Bruegel. I mean, I love the Durero. I love the painting, the masters. I mean, how not to be amazed by them? But at the same time, I want to be a citizen of nowadays, of my days. So I try to take from there to the present something that builds my way of looking at things, trying to look forward and to look backwards.
But at the same time, you purposely create uncanny or pictures which also make you uncomfortable?
Yeah. Yeah, because we live in an uncomfortable world. I mean, normally I have the sensation, and it's growing, you know, when I grow old, it's growing more and more on me, is that the world is such a strange place, and that I'm getting more and more, you know, sarcastic and misanthropic. Mm-hmm. And I don't want it to make myself be a serious person or angry person with life.
Yeah.
And I try to throw it to my paintings, just to
get rid of it
in a way. Yeah. And in a way try to show people that we are living in, you know, anything can be expected from the world, and then the world is a strange place. And art can be the way that show us that world can be beautiful and at the same time very horrible place. And, you know, we shouldn't see the art as something that gets away from the world. Just it's just a peaceful place, just to get rid of our obsessions. I think the art should be the other way around. Maybe a good conversation in a bar with a person is the right moment to forget about the world. But the art, no. Art, I think it should not put the finger in the eye of the viewer.
And not escapism.
No, not mm-hmm. escapism, at yeah. least for me. Escapism should be in another place. It's like music. I mean, good music makes you fever, makes you fear things, that try to shake you
yeah.
in a way. Yeah. Hmm. It's not also about beauty. It's not everything about beauty and having a good time or be something nice. And I mean, art...
Irritate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not irritate, but art has the, you know, the ability to shake your thoughts and then make you feel present or make you feel aware of what the world is. I think it could be said like this.
Paco, thank you so much.
It was a pleasure, Johan.
Thanks for this exhibition and looking forward to what else to come.
Okay, thank you very much for having me, Johan.
Was mit Kunst? Ein Podcast von und mit Johann König.